It's at this time every Sunday morning that we are joined by Business Day and Daily Maverick columnist Ishmael Lakhadir and also our correspondent in Sydney, Katie McDonald, to unpack some of the week's top stories from home and abroad. And we start with Ishmael. Morning, Ishmael. What have you got for us?
Good morning to you.
Hello.
You always sound so bright on a Sunday morning.
I try.
Yeah, well, you know, about this running thing. You know, I once ran from Camps Bay to Llandudno. I ran 5 kilometres. And then I stood and was about to turn around and I went, oh, okay, now I have to run all the way back again. So I just stopped running because, you know, it's fine to go running, but then you have to run all the way back again.
Well, not in these days where you can Uber. I know a lot of people who start out with incredibly, you know, virtuous intentions and then they do their 5K and then they go, oh, no. And they pull out their phone and they Uber themselves home past the McDonald's and grab themselves a massive McMuffin. So, you know.
Couldn't be asked.
Couldn't be asked. Yeah, exactly. Right. What have you got?
You know, it's been somewhat of a quiet weekend on the elections. You know, it's the usual Cyril making everybody happy with his smile. The DA have gone somewhat in a bit of a hiding or holding pattern. The EFF has suddenly gone quiet. There's nothing exciting going on, you know, on that front. But a couple of big stories that I think we need to take note of. One is the hostage drama by military veterans. That they held ministers for days. As listeners will remember, the military veterans kept two ministers and a deputy minister hostage at a hotel in Tshwane. But now what's happening is there now starts the damage control. So the defense minister, Thandi Modise, says, no, it's not really a problem. There was nothing really wrong with it. Plus, it's a sign of a maturing democracy. And, you know, you can take that any way you like. Of course, we are a maturing democracy, but holding cabinet ministers, paramilitary groups, holding cabinet ministers hostage is never a good thing. I mean, you look at what happened on the 6th of January in the United States, you know, and they are a mature democracy. It's never a good thing. So this is, you know, it's cause for concern.
Yeah.
Especially since this week also it's been revealed that South Africa has continued a gradual slide into lawlessness by international, you know, people who monitor these things globally. So lawlessness continues. But we still have strong institutions. That's what these think tanks in Washington are coming up. So you have lawlessness and you have these factions within the ANC and it's spilling out into the public. So you see that the other story that's come out of this is the minister, National Police Commissioner Minister Kesha Tole, is the President Ramaphosa sent him a letter saying, "Now, why should I not sack you? You know, this is usually a prelude to suspension." Tole, the problem with Tole is, you know, he's been implicated in some nasty stuff, but the point being that his association with Jacob Zuma is what's above them there. But the story for me of the week is, and this is personal, is the controversial court judgment on the issue of sexual consent. I think it undermines our quest to secure and protect and promote human rights of women.
My understanding was you have a case of a paramedic found guilty who was convicted of raping his girlfriend.
Right.
A judge in a high court judge in the Eastern Cape then overturned that conviction on the basis of, because the girlfriend had agreed to oral sex, she then agreed, the judge then held that she had essentially agreed to penetrative sex. That to me is utterly, utterly insane. I did a story on the Late Night Show a few years back about this thing called stealthing, which is whilst having intercourse, a guy removes the condom, and there've been a lot of calls for that to be called rape. Because if you are having sex with somebody and you agree that sex is going to use contraception, when the nature of that sexual act changes, you are not surely still consenting to that. If I consent to have sex with you with a condom, you then remove the condom unaware, without my consent, that then takes us into a whole different realm. And I think this is the same thing. If I agree to oral sex with you, how on earth is that agreeing to penetrative sex? That's insane.
Well, yeah, this opens up a whole very, very good discussion. It's the whole thing about trust and about how far you should go, how far you can go, or how far you may go. That is just, it's dishonesty. And it's, you know, I won't mention names. A student of mine in the U.S. told me several years ago that I'll tell you what she said. She said, I wanted love. I didn't want violence. And the point was, it was an abusive encounter where one thing led to another against her wishes, then to another further against her wishes, and ended up being violence. So she said, so this is, you know, this is a problem with, I'm generalizing, but, you know, you'll forgive me, with men, you know, we should, and I'll implicate myself, we should understand that no means no. No doesn't mean try harder.
Yeah.
This what we're talking about is those limits. There are limits to that.
This idea that foreplay in some way then is the giving of consent. It's not going to be something that I ever, ever, ever agree with. I'm imagining the judge in this case was a man. It's so problematic that the broader implications of this judgment are hugely problematic. What's the last thing you've got for us?
You know, those are the ones.
Oh, that's it.
One thing that bothers me as well is that UNISA is continuing to gradually decline. UNISA was for many years a standout educational institution that foreigners used to do correspondence courses. But I remember about 5 years ago, there was a country in Western Asia that refused to accept UNISA qualifications. And that has just spread around the world. UNISA qualifications no longer carry any weight. But what's happening now is a ministerial report has come out that flags a culture of corruption, fear, and intimidation as the institution slides into mediocrity at most top distance learning institutions. So this once proud institution has become a qualifications factory where degrees and diplomas are churned out to dissatisfied students. Now, you know, this is part of what in the United States calls social promotion. So, you know, a pupil or student does not pass or does not make the grade, but, you know, for the greater social good, you move them on to the next grade, which I think is detrimental to the future of any society. So, you know, one professor from the University of Stellenbosch Center of Excellence says this is quite a tragic story. And we should be quite concerned. We should be concerned about this. Yeah. And, you know, we really should be concerned about this.
All right. That's your top three. We thank you for your time this morning, Mr. Lakhadir. We will chat to you again next week. And now we go from Pringle Bay to Sydney to speak to Katie McDonald, who joins us every Sunday morning to give us the news from the Antipodes and surrounds. Very good morning to you, madam.
Good morning, Sarah Jane, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. All right, well, let's start with COVID-related stuffs. The New South Wales government announcing that it will allow non-quarantine travel into Sydney. This is a turn up for the books.
It's a biggie. So we have this new premier, Dominic Perrottet, and he's really sort of yeah, getting out there when it comes to opening up the state and the city. And he declared on Friday, or said on Friday, that, yeah, if you're double vaccinated, you can enter New South Wales, you can enter Sydney, you can fly in without quarantine. You obviously have to do the testing, so test negative upon arrival. But essentially, yeah, they're going to be letting people in. And it's a big thing because, as you know, our borders have been closed since March last year. And there are not just Australians trapped overseas, but there have been all sorts of just sad, terrible stories with regards to family members. So now they've said that parents of Australian citizens and permanent residents will be classified as immediate family. So they can also travel to Australian states and territories that have reached the 80% double dose vaccination targets. It's been a big, big week because there's that excitement that, you know, airlines are putting on more flights. Sydney opened up on Monday. It has been absolutely crazy, and people are excited. I mean, it was unbelievable, Sarah Jane. There were a couple of shops and hairdressers and bars that opened at midnight on Sunday night, last Sunday,
sure,
to welcome, you know, this new freedom. Yeah. So it's been a big, big thing. I will say that a couple of the other states are not very happy with New South Wales, but it's going to open. It's brilliant. And they're going to keep hotel quarantine for unvaccinated arrivals. And at the moment, they're saying there'll be about 200 spots available a week. So quite a big thing.
It's good news. It's good news. And we're obviously delighted that we're now off the UK's red list. And now it looks like we, hopefully, fingers crossed, will have a more prosperous tourist season than we did last year. Although, of course, we are still looming under the cloud of a potential fourth wave. But good news for us, too. How about this enormous shipment, the largest ever shipment of heroin seized by Australian police, worth, and I'm trying to work out what it would be in rand, $140 million. What is that in rand?
Yes, apologies. I should have done the conversion. Roughly times it by 10.
Oh, times it by 10. Oh, so we're looking in the billions, yeah, then?
Yes, absolutely. Gosh. Huge. 450 kilograms of heroin. It was in a freight container of ceramic tiles. It came in from Malaysia. And, yeah, the police seized it. They say detected. So who knows what else is coming in. You know, there's been a lot of focus on organized crime and the importation of drugs. But they have found this. It's absolutely massive. They've charged a Malaysian national with import and attempted possession of a commercial quantity, because it is a commercial quantity.
Even for the most hardened junkie, that is a lot of heroin to be doing, isn't it?
That is
as an individual,
amount.
Yeah. I tell you what struck me about this story, Katie, the weight of the shipment, 450 kilograms, which apparently is the same or as heavy as a grand piano. That's extraordinary.
That's what they say. Unbelievable. And look, thankfully they caught it. I mean, they think that it could have saved, or they estimate it could have saved about 225 lives.
Yeah.
It's concerning. I mean, the drug trade goes on, and it's hugely concerning. But thankfully, they caught this one, and, yeah, we'll see what happens to the gentleman. And obviously there are going to be more arrests. They're working with the Royal Malaysian Police. So it's a big, big haul. And, yeah, kudos to the Aussie police for that one.
Yeah, for sure. Kudos indeed. Saving 222 lives. Yeah, that's extraordinary.
Mm.
Well done. Well done to the Aussie police. And, I mean, clearly this individual not working alone. Obviously, it'd be interesting to see the further arrests that are likely to come from that. And then finally, what are the Ernie Awards, Katie?
This is excellent, absolutely excellent. So the Ernie Awards have been going for nearly 30 years. I think it's their 29th year. And they're awards that were named in honour of a gentleman or a man, I don't know how to refer to him, called Ernie Eckhob. He was the secretary of the Australian Workers Union. That was the old Shearers Union. And he was known for his misogynistic commentary. And one of his more famous quotes was that women only wanted to be shearers for the sex. So in 1993, these awards were born. And they're essentially held every year. I don't think they're having a big dinner this year, but usually they have a dinner for 300 women. The nominees are announced. The winners are chosen by essentially those who win the awards are the ones that get the most amount of booing when their commentary is called out. And last year, for example, I don't know if you were aware of this, but they've got all different ones. They've got political, judicial, sporting, and the sporting one is called The Warning, after Shane Warne. Israel Folau won that last year with his quote that bushfires crippling Australia are God's punishment for legalising abortion and same-sex marriage.
Oh, heavens above. Okay, yep.
Yeah, the gold one went to a bloke by the name of Jason Westbury. He's head of a travel agents union, and he was objecting to a reporter's journalist reporting of an industry event, and he essentially said that she needs to be given a firm uppercut or a slap across the face.
Hey, hey, hey.
And it's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, one can have a sort of laugh and a giggle over it, but it's quite serious because it just highlights how, yeah, there's still that lack of equality for women and the prejudicial, misogynistic, the views, the remarks.
I've got a great contender for this year, going on the basis of Ishmael Lakhadian's second story about this judge who decided that a guy's rape conviction should be overturned because his partner had agreed to oral sex and so therefore she tacitly implied to penetrative sex. I think the judge in that case is probably a contender for the Gold Award for this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, those comments go on and on and on. I mean, there's been a big issue. It's still going on with a young intern in Parliament who accused a colleague of rape. And this one radio host who's been nominated, he basically commented, he said, I just asked myself why the Prime Minister doesn't call it out for what it is, a silly girl who got drunk.
Need to do better, please. Yeah.
So you could imagine. Oh, by the way, they have got the Clinton stroke Trump Award, and that's for repeat offenders. And you'd be, well, not happy, but maybe interested to know that our previous Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, he's won the most awards, 15 of them. So it's actually not a good reflection on so many of the people out there in the public eye and in public positions.
No, it's
quite
not.
Sadly.
No, sadly indeed.
No.
All right, Katie. Well, good news in terms of the easing up of restrictions. That is something good that you've told us about this morning. So fantastic. And also, well done again to the Aussie police for their bust of heroin worth $140 million. Is that right?
$140 million.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maths is not my strong point, but I always times it by 10. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well done.
And I'll update you with the winners of these Ernie Awards.
Yes.
Whether it makes a difference, I don't know, but one would hope that it did. Sadly, you know, this sort of misogyny, culture of misogyny, which is prevalent throughout the world, Jane, as you know, just doesn't seem to be
abating. Katie McDonald joins us every Sunday morning to give us the latest news from the Antipodes and surrounds, and she and Ishmael Lakhadian will be back at the same time next week.